Hello, and welcome to the first special episode of The Hopeless Romantic. We are making this for one of our patrons on our Patreon, which we will link in the description below. As we mentioned before, if you pledge $10 or more per month to The Hopeless Romantic, you can request to have us talk about a topic of your choice for 10 minutes or more. And I'm really excited about the topic that our patron Renee suggested for this, which is how do you work with having, you know, you're writing a romance and you have one character who you know really well, who's really significant. How do you deal with finding a partner for that character? And how do you work with more than one really, really dynamic character, especially if one of them comes to you first or comes to you more strongly?
Yeah, there's a lot there. You know, my instinctive response to that is to say, if you have this first character that you've thought of and you know the ins and outs of them, and the best thing to do is find a foil for that. Like, think about not necessarily what they would be attracted to, but like what they would find conflict with, because I feel like sparks are what you're looking for in a romance. You want two people who are sort of complementary, but still have friction. So I think the first thing would be nailing down like, oh, what would this person find, you know, like a burr in their side? Like, what about another person would maybe irritate them or make them feel, you know, because the worst thing when you're reading a romance is when the secondary, you know, the love interest is introduced and they're just like, whatever, you know, like, oh, they're pleasant. Who cares?
Well, especially if you have kind of a lead character who's really compelling and who you really care about, and then you meet the person that they're destined to spend their life with, and you're like, oh.
Them.
Oh, it's you. you want them to be equally compelling, even if one of them is more the central protagonist, which sometimes happens.
Yeah.
But if you have, for example, dual POV, you want that second character to really be able to carry a scene and to have a really distinct voice of their own. So I think you definitely need to have, even if you've one more central protagonist, you need an equal amount of characterization work and sort of exploration of the second protagonist, because they really are the second protagonist. They're going to be like not necessarily your main character's life partner, but very possibly.
I think an interesting way to do that might be, because you mentioned character voice, picking almost arbitrarily like, oh, well, you know your main character, you know how they speak, how they think. Maybe sort of invert that and find facets of the way that they speak that you can cancel in their love interest to sort of solidify them. Like, maybe if they're still a little bit vague to you, like if you have a character who, I don't know, talks like me with a lot of upspeak and filler and, you know, is very animated, have someone who's maybe a little bit more reserved, a little bit, you know, a little bit more monotonous, I guess. Just something that you could find in their speech pattern or in their voice that will make them distinct to not only you, but the reader. Because I struggle with this as a writer. I don't always do it, but my dialogue's usually pretty on point. And unfortunately, what that means is that a lot of characters speak like I do, just because it sounds the most natural to me. And so delineating one character's POV or even their dialogue from another can get a little tricky if they both sound like me. So while that can be a useful thing, you definitely want to sit there and make very deliberate choices about how your characters speak and what their, like if you had dual POV, how they would come across. For example, the thing I'm working on now, I have a character who's a very systems-based thinker and doesn't have a lot of filler and is very deliberate and a little bit more quiet, and their love interest is more me. Is more gregarious, very, I'm not gregarious and charming, but like maybe on a good day. They're very charming. They're very animated. They have a lot of, you know, expressiveness going for them. And so it makes it easier for me to fit the pieces together. And it makes the characters, I think, more complementary and more sort of symbiotic if one of them has very defined character traits in terms of voice and the other one is the inverse of that.
Yeah, I was actually just having a trouble with this particular issue for a piece I'm working on where I was designing the characters from scratch. And oftentimes when I come up with characters, I base them on something. I might base them on a real person. I might base them on another character I've written. I might base them on another character someone else has written. Because, you know, stealing is the art of writing, essentially.
Yeah.
So I usually have a grounding and a voice for those characters before I start working on them. And for these particular characters, I don't have that. And something I was struggling with was I came up with a central protagonist that I really liked. And then I was trying to come up with a complimentary person for them. And I kept trying to think of the kind of the opposite of this character. All I could try to do was, you know, be like, okay, they're kind of caustic and witty and sharp and kind of withdrawn. So I'm going to give them a really, really bubbly love interest. And it just wasn't working. It wasn't what I envisioned for that character. It wasn't what my protagonist was going to find attractive and what was going to draw them out of their shell, because they start off very, very withdrawn. I should give these characters fake names. Central protagonist, let's call her Carrie. Carrie starts the story very withdrawn and kind of closed off. And even though I think sometimes it would work for this particular character, the idea of having a love interest who was like bubbly and aggressively like friendly and out there and like, you know, breaking down their barriers, I knew that Carrie would just find that obnoxious. I knew there wasn't time in that story for them to kind of go on an emotional journey from I don't like you and I find you hideously annoying to, oh, your annoyingness is part of what makes you special to me, to I love you, actually, which I'm not saying that can't be done effectively. It totally can. I've seen it happen, but this is supposed to be a relatively short piece that has a lot of plot going on. And so the idea of mixing that up was not working for me at all. So what I actually wound up looking at in that case was, who is someone who Carrie would find relatable and somebody who would easily get under her skin and who would easily kind of set her at ease, but who is then substantially different in some way to kind of still have that contrast between them, because you don't want the characters to just date themselves.
No.
But I wanted... I thought that she needed somebody to kind of set her at ease and then realize that they were not the same person at all. So, well, Carrie is very kind of cold and witty and sharp. Her love interest wound up being kind of still withdrawn, still very laid back, or not laid back, but still kind of like, you know, not out there, not zany, but who is very warm. Instead of being very sharp, who's kind of very charming and witty in a nice way, as opposed to in a snappy way. And that wound up working really well. So that's another technique you could try is look for what does that character need? In this case, I really needed somebody who would make my protagonist feel like safe and comfortable. But then how can I make them different? Very different.
Yeah, and it really comes down to understanding your main character, because what makes, you know, your main character feel comfortable is not a universal truth. So once you sort of figured that out, it became like, oh, well, their personality informs the other person's personality because you can craft it specifically. Like, if they're a person who, I know you described the love interest as warm, but if they're a person who is uncomfortable with someone being overt about, like, sympathy, you know, if they just want someone to be sort of point blank and like, oh, that sucks, rather than like, oh, no, you poor dear. Like, that is something important to know, because some people need that validation and other people find it really uncomfortable. So once you know that, you can be like, oh, well, and then you could even, you know, flash of inspiration, you could have that be something that is a conflict for them. Like, yeah, they get along and whatever, there's a spark here, but, you know, something terrible happens and the other person, just out of the generosity of their heart and the depth of their feeling, is like, I'm so sorry, I'm here for you, do you need a hug, do you need tea? And the other person's like, nah, no, don't touch me. You know, that can be a facet, because you don't want everything to be hunky-dory and perfect. You mm-hmm. want some nuance to that, and you want some conflict with that.
And I feel like it's always interesting with characters that you might have a love interest who works with your protagonist on one level and not so much on another. You might have a character, in this case, what I'm dealing with is a character with a very harsh exterior who has a soft, gooey core, which I think is not uncommon in romance characters, who is very prickly, but is also very deeply hurt. So on one level, they might really enjoy the sympathy and they might want to be comforted on some level, but not be able to allow that or to react defensively against it for some personal reason. And I think that gets to really interesting conflict, because then you can have moments like character snaps because they don't want to be constrained or like comforted in this way. But on some level, they're also like, oh, I wish I could allow people closer to me.
Yeah, I like that.
I can tell I'm into this story right now, because everything I'm saying is just coded talking about it.
Actually, that draws me to the point of, we talked a little bit about this in the previous episode that we recorded, and I have a fantasy novel pretty much plotted, that I've had plotted for several years now, because I'm the worst person. And I have a main character, right? And I think, as this often happens, you get your main character and you're like, I know everything about them. I know their appearance. I know their, you know, their driving goal. I know their backstory. I know how they are in pretty much any given situation. And then it comes time for the love interest and you're like, and that's exactly what happened to me. And I had like a list of beats I thought would be compelling. Like, I'll spoil this, whatever, it's probably going to change. My main character is a mage and has powers that in a particular society are kind of frowned upon. And the other dude is from a very anti-magic society. So I thought, oh, I will make him, you know, very close-minded, and maybe I'll make him, like, have served in the military, and I will make him, like, middle or lower class, and he's going to be very rigid. And then every time I would sit down and try and nail down details of this character, because I thought, you know, what great conflict will arise from this, it was just, it was a mess. I couldn't even visualize the first thing about this character. And I knew everything about the society from where he was from, or at least I thought I did. And then, you know, I struggled with this for literally years, sitting there and going, like, why do I know my main character? And then the love interest, I know what he should be, and yet he's formless. And then eventually, KJ Charles tweeted about sacking her main characters, and that was coincidentally the same time I was sitting there going, you know, maybe
just let this... him go.
Maybe this thing that I've been so married to this entire time isn't working because it's wrong, and not just because I haven't put enough time and effort into it. And then realized that instead of making him sort of, you know, scrappy and very rigid in his moralism, to make him a little bit of like a dandy, a noble, someone who is spoiled and aristocratic, and someone who looks down on people of different classes, or maybe even doesn't realize it. Like, I think it would be more insidious than that, but just is filled with a lot of classism and a lot of preconceived notions about magic and whatever else. And then realize, like, oh, that actually makes that super interesting, because you get, you kind of get a more immediate picture of who that is, because it informs, like, the kind of clothes he would wear and the kind of profession he would or wouldn't have, and, like, what his family would be like is, you know, if they're wealthy or whatever, you have to figure out why and how and if there are any expectations there. So immediately I came up with a wealth of new ideas, and this character is actually taking shape. And I kind of, you talked about basing them off of people, and I kind of was able to see, like, oh, it's a character like this. And you can start to, if you're struggling with voice, you can start to draw little things like, oh, well, this one character had a voice like this that I thought exemplified, you know, an aristocratic sort of snobby person who's absolutely in line with the voice I want to create. So when I write, I hear that voice in my head. And I will say, for me at least, they take on a life of their own. I feel like I'm borrowing traits to whittle the stone into a shape, and then eventually I don't need them anymore, and they'll sometimes turn into something completely different. Like, I'll start out with these list of things that I think I need. Like, oh, I've got the voice from here, and I think they look like this. And then, you know, I've taken it from whatever character. Maybe I borrowed something from their backstory. And then as you get further and further in the manuscript, you realize, oh, actually, all of that was just training wheels, and I don't need them anymore.
Yeah, absolutely. This was a really interesting question for me to get, because often the thing that sparks me to write a story is the relationship between two characters. I don't tend to start with one protagonist. I tend to start with a dynamic I want and then have to make two characters from that, which can also be a challenge of its own, because sometimes it's like, oh, well, now that I've made these people, the dynamic I wanted isn't there. And I've made two people and I'm not as into the relationship between them, even if they're fine as characters. But I was trying to think of other times that I've dealt with this in my writing, and I know that something else that I've run into is if I have one character who's kind of more the grounding person for the story, or is whose emotional arc I base a lot of it around, even if I have a solid love interest for them, sometimes trying to get that love interest to have more of a plot role or more of an emotional arc can be really challenging when you're working around this one person. And then their love interest kind of becomes more of a B plot, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. Where it's like, okay, the really important thing is that Jimmy goes on.
Your bullshit names give me life every time. Just these fucking generic.
I wish I could come up with something more interesting.
White boy.
I was looking around for another name, and I just saw I have a whatchamacallit, a title card thingy from a panel I did. And so I looked up and I was like, what's a name? Austin. Austin, that could be, or Chant, perhaps. Those are all good options. Theodore. Theodore is what I'm going to call this
one.
There
you go.
Theodore has this really important story that's being told about them. And all of the plot is about Theodore. And Theodore goes through all of this stuff. And now I have to fit in their relationship with someone, and if that relationship isn't part of it all, and if it's not part of Theodore's character development and any of it, it's going to be really hard to build in an emotional journey for them too.
Yeah, the plot needs to affect the characters, and while that is like sort of the bare minimum for what you're doing, I would even say the relationship has to affect the plot.
Yeah.
I feel like once you've achieved that, like, because the other one is like, yeah, okay, clearly. The other one is like, okay, you know something's working if the relationship and or the two characters separately or together are influencing the plot.
Yeah, because I feel like otherwise you kind of get into this zone where like, the love interest just has to be protagonist's, Theodore's, safe haven mm-hmm. from the storm of their life. But that as a role, like being somebody's like doting spouse,
yeah.
doting spouse that they just come home to at the end of the day, who has no role in the rest of it, has no agency whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
Like just being the person who like makes you feel better after you do all of your, you know, grand hijinks doesn't really involve a lot of character growth or even a lot of relationship growth necessarily, because it's just like maybe getting more and more dependent. And I feel like that's something I fall into, is I wind up with two characters I really like, but only one of them is dynamic, and that makes the relationship flat. And I think for a romance that really is strung around the romantic relationship and the development of that, the romance has to be dynamic too. The relationship has to be dynamic, and both of the characters have to be dynamic.
Agreed. Yeah, we talked about this some when we were talking about how to avoid the pitfalls of having a milquetoast love interest. And it really comes down to the idea that your secondary character has to be just as interesting. So if you don't care about them as much as you care about your main character, and it doesn't have to be the same kind of care, it can be different. You can find them infuriating, but at least it's still an emotional response that they elicit. If you don't have that, the audience isn't either, and why would the main character?
You have to find
what's attractive. I'm struggling with that right fucking now, actually. My two characters that I talked about with the voices being different is that, like, I'm trying to understand why, because I understand why one of them is attracted to the other, but I don't get the reciprocity yet. And I feel like I've made a grave mistake somewhere. It's like, did I just make that? Because there's an age difference and there's a lot of like, well, why would you be attracted to someone when they're not on the same wavelength as you in terms of life experience? And what is it that's so compelling about this person that like, because, you know, oh, they're hot. Like, that's not enough.
Yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
And they're you know, they're kind of an asshole at points, and like, that's not enough. That's enough to create friction, but then you have to figure out what keeps them coming back. And I'm struggling with that right now. I actually engineered circumstances where they're forced to be around each other, which is, I guess, in some ways helpful. But I'm also like, and how do I not make this acrimonious? How do I make this these two characters meet each other and sort of deconstruct their preconceived notions of each other and get to the depth of who they are and like their good parts? And that is difficult. It's what I'm struggling with right now, and I feel like I struggle with all the time. Yeah, I don't know. I'm starting to, because on one hand I can sit there and go, oh, what would make me attracted to this person? And it's not necessarily the same reason that my main character, or actually it's the love interest, my POV character is the one I'm having trouble figuring out why someone would like him, which is a horrible thing to realize. Cause I started out and he was way more endearing. He was kind of like fumbly and ridiculous. And now he's just sort of stilted and cold. I'm like, I'm sorry, you're unlikable. I'll figure you out eventually.
Funny. Cause every time you describe him, he sounds really cute and like endearing.
Yeah.
And then you're writing him and he's like, oh, he's such an asshole. And I'm like, oh.
Well, you know what's funny, too, is this was going to be one of my suggestions, right? This is so stupid, but I love it. I am obsessed with Myers-Briggs. I think it is a ridiculous and not particularly useful tool. Like, it can give you help in, like, communication styles with people if you kind of know, like, oh, they're an introvert who tends to be, you know, feelings-based. That'll help you. But I just think that it's funny, and I like reading, you know, how these different Myers-Briggs types interact. If you don't know what that is, it's like, I'm, for example, an INFJ, which is introverted, intuitive, feeling, judging. And then other people might be an extroverted, sensing, you know, perceiving, whatever.
You really are feeling, judging all the time.
I am feeling and then judging instantaneously. And so what I did to try and figure out, because I knew this, my story wasn't working, my characters weren't working the way that they were, and I'd never done this before, but you know how a lot of the times they'll tell you to, like, fill out something as your character or fill out like a survey about your character. What I did was I took the Myers-Briggs tests as both of my characters. Like, how would this character feel? You know, they have these questions and you sort of rate them. They're not quite yes or no. And it's like, agree, strongly disagree. And so I went through and I found out, and this helped me tremendously nail down like some character traits. I found out that my main character was an INTJ, which coincidentally, my best friend is also an INTJ, which they're very logic focused, systems focused. Like the way that they take in information is very much like a processor. And then I'm similar to that, but I've got the feeling. I've got the feels. And then the love interest, it turned out, was, I think it was ENFP, but almost the exact opposite And then when I looked up that type, I think it was ENFP, it was like, gregarious, charming, can get people to do things for them, kind of has a lot of relationships that, like, the negatives to that were, like, they may fall apart easily, they fall in love too fast. You know, someone who is naturally charming and endearing might use that to a manipulative advantage. And I was like, oh, I'm learning things about these characters. So I feel like that could be a useful tool if you're a person like me who maybe needs help framing things about your character, because a lot of characterization is so intuitive. You're like, I feel like this character would do this. And then for me to sit down and realize, oh, well, this character is reacting this way because the way that they think is very like unemotional. Like they sort of process data rather than, you know, react based on their knee-jerk emotional response. And so that was useful to me, and I hope it would be useful to listeners who are struggling with the same thing.
Yeah, that actually reminds me of something I've done before, and I kind of had the dynamic down for these characters, but this really helped me. So I'm a big fan of questionnaires that you give your characters, like, and then you answer them as if the character were being interviewed. Because that for me, if I'm struggling with character voice, that's something I do. And I like those in general. Those are probably helpful. But something I did for a contemporary romance that I was working on with two trans main characters and a major secondary character who's also trans was to come up with basically like a survey of their feelings on various topics relating to being trans, specifically in that story, because I knew that was going to be, it was a major thing that brought them together. It was a major thing that they differed on, and it was also going to be a major way that they supported each other. That was a big part of the story. So it had questions like, what does it mean to be a responsible, like, figurehead for a community? What does it mean to be a man or a woman? What is passing? Like, do you want to pass? And stuff like that. And a lot of them wound up being, like, fairly questions that would be pretty intense to ask anyone. And that really, because that was such a big part of their relationships with each other and the story, answering those questions allowed me to identify a lot of conflicts and sources of support that they could share. And that was really helpful. So if there's something that you know, either plot-wise or emotionally, is going to be a kind of a flashpoint for your protagonists, dig into that.
Like, yeah.
And figure out, like, even more ways that can be important to them, because it turned out, for example, in this case that, let's see, what names are on my bookshelf? Andre. Andre.
I don't know why we're so reticent to talk about the fucking names and stories we're eventually going to put out.
I don't know. It makes me nervous. But anyway, Andre was a very, very, like, femme presenting trans man who's very, very comfortable with himself, very comfortable with his body, very angry and progressive, and really, really there for other trans people and there to defend them, and very visibly trans in a way that he couldn't escape. And then the other main character, Herbert.
Jesus.
Herbert was...
Can you imagine those names? I'm sorry for anyone named Andre or Herbert, but, like, those names exchanged in the heat of passion, like, oh, Andre, oh, Herbert.
Herbert. Anyway. Herbert was, like, super, very, very butch, very masculine trans dude who passed completely and was very closeted and who avoided other trans people habitually to avoid being seen as trans as a self-defense mechanism, which is fucked up. But that was a central part of that character, and who had way less connection with community and a much more toxic relationship with himself. And so that really helped me identify places where those characters were going to come into conflict.
Yeah, I know a little bit about those characters from what you've told me, and I'm just like, my sad trans children, let me hold you.
Yeah.
It's so funny because when you get down to it, like, that's what I was talking about. Like, the things that they would find irritating about each other are so integral to their identity? Like, how do those two characters who have such different ideas of, I guess, what being trans is, what transness is, and how they sort of function in society as trans, like, oh, how do they, like, not rip each other's heads off?
Well, they nearly do.
But. You nearly decapitate them. Yeah, I'm so fascinated by that story, and I want you to eventually get back to it if you do.
I will.
Your poor side. That was what you were going to do for fucking Nana, wasn't it? And then you were like, actually,
I'm going to change my mind at the last minute.
You know
and
how much
write Green Muse instead.
I judged you for that. Like, it was such a, I was like, don't do it. And you were like, I'm going to do the thing. I feel like anytime I tell you not to do something, you just fucking, you just do. It's like that
You've cracked the code.
That one AU. It's because you told me not fault. To. Like the one AU that I'm like, you can't write that. You're like, oh, I'm not going to write it. And I just feel like you're bucking against the reins I put on you. Like, I'm not going to write it. I'm not going to write it. And I know you're going to be like, I wrote 20,000 words of this AU that's your fault. And I'm going to be like, fucking, I told you not to. You have too many things to work on. Austin has so many projects on his plate that I'm like,
to be fair, most of them are stagnating. If that makes it better.
No, it's like, that makes me feel better about it, actually. You productive motherfucker. Yeah, that book I want you to get back to. I'm excited for the story you're talking about with Carrie and Carrie's partner. I'm really excited for that for a multitude of reasons because I know what it's for. Is there, I'm trying to think, you know what would be interesting is like, one of the things I'm editing or co-editing an upcoming anthology that's got the theme is these two different pairings and sort of shoehorning characters around these pairing types, like these character types of It's Magic and Mayhem, the charity anthology for GRNW. And the character types are tattoo artist and soldier and then mage and cyborg. And just that pairing tells you so much about what the story could be. Like, I feel like, you know, two different people hear those prompts, they're going to take them in two very different directions. But like, if you have that solid bottom line of what these characters have to be, I guess that's not even like the mage and cyborg one is so inherent to what these characters would act like it's their identity at that point.
Mm-hmm. Or at least it's gonna heavily impact, you know,
yeah,
and how they interact with the world.
Obviously, if you're a soldier or a tattoo artist, even like that's going to heavily impact you too. But when you get down to like mage and cyborg, yeah, like those are very defining traits. So I wonder if that would be a useful thing to do when you're plotting or you're having trouble coming up with a character. Think of their occupation / identity first. It might be easier because when you have a blank slate and you're like, it could be anything, that's daunting. That's really hard. So giving yourself parameters in any way you can, and you can always change them. Like, you're not locked into something unless it's actually, you know, published. So if I were sitting down and plotting something and I had like my main character who's a baker, you know, ooh, I've got a baker main character, I better research some recipes. What do you do when you need a love interest for them? And it's like, well, I don't know. You could kind of pull one out of a hat and then find the things that would make that interesting. Like I almost said a candlestick maker.
The ultimate conflict.
The ultimate. But no, like maybe you have, I don't know. Because if you have a baker, like that sort of informs the hours that they would work. And then how would you navigate a relationship around that? You know, someone who gets up at the ass crack of dawn every morning to, like, set out dough or whatever.
I like how we've gone from mage and cyborg to, like, the most benign example.
But, you know, thinking about that, you've got this baker. It's like, all right, well, they're probably, you know, they don't, they have I've met bakers. They have actually fairly high stress jobs. They're very labor intensive. So what is your main character's love interest going to be like? Are they going to be an accountant? Maybe. Are they going to be, you know, do you want someone laid back? Do you want like a yoga instructor? Do you want, you know, what do you want them to play off of? You know, what would be complementary and what elements of their two careers would cause friction?
Yeah, I think something that we've obviously brought up already, but that I want to hammer home is do not shy away from conflict. Like, especially if you are writing a story that is about a relationship arc, don't just go for what's going to be easy and easy to get together. Go, like, not that you can't, like, you definitely can, but I think if you're struggling to kind of get shape in that relationship, conflict is good, and it doesn't necessarily lock out, like, you know, a happy, healthy relationship.
No, and conflict can be external. It doesn't have, I mean, yeah, you're probably going to want internal conflict with the two characters, but all of the best love stories and meet cutes, there's something that they have to struggle against. I'm thinking about some of my favorite, you know, pairings in queer literature and pairings in media in general, and, like, none of them were like, I met you and you're cute and we're gonna, you know, we're gonna just whatever. We're gonna go get coffee and
it can be done, but we were actually just talking about this on the podcast with the podcast with KJ. It's hard.
It's very difficult.
It's hard to do that. I was actually thinking, because we just did the podcast with KJ Charles, one of my favorite recent examples of this was I was reading Think of England, which is a great book that I really recommend.
And
you start out, I think it's single POV.
Single POV. Just Archie.
And the main character is sort of in this, I think he's in a drawing room, and he's looking around at all the people there, and you're kind of being introduced one by one to all of these characters, and it includes, like, several handsome men. And as a romance reader, I'm sitting there like, who is it? Who's the love interest? Who's the love interest? Who's the love interest? And it's all like, you know, nice dudes, handsome dudes that he knows, da 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 da. And then it gets to the guy who looked like the opposite of everything he wanted, who he, like, dislikes instantly, dislikes on sight. And I'm like, there he is. There's the love interest.
It's like, oh, I'm excited.
Because then you have to deal with those, like, that knee-jerk gut reaction.
And then you get to peel back the layers of why they had that reaction and how the other character reacts. And I actually love that story for talking about character conflict. Think of England's really good and really cute. And I love Daniel. Daniel's my son. I love Archie too, but, like, Daniel's my son. And it's interesting too, because how funny is that? It's a single POV of Archie. What's his last name? Curtis. Yeah. Archie Curtis.
I kept thinking Custer, and I was like, that's not right.
No. Although.
Custard.
Custer. No.
Curtis.
Archie Curtis. And it's a single POV, right? Which, that's difficult in its ways, and it's simple in its others. And then you have the love interest. And just on the basis of Archie's, like, reaction to the love interest, to Daniel, you're like, oh, this is fucking good. And I love Daniel through Archie's eyes. Like, maybe I wouldn't like Daniel as much if the story had been dual POV or from Daniel's perspective. That's an interesting point. Like, maybe it's more interesting to see the character through a single POV because you and the main character are becoming attracted to them in many ways.
That might be another piece of advice for people to try, because I think it's really interesting how characters come off through other people's eyes. So if you're really struggling to write this secondary character, it might be interesting writing them as your POV character.
Yeah, reframe it that way. Yeah,
reframing it. Let them narrate, and then also find out what it is in that dynamic. Like, what do they notice about your main character? What is it that first impression, how does that strike them? And you know, that also gives you a little bit of breathing room, I think, because you're going to see that primary protagonist a little more strongly when they're being described.
Yeah, and I would say if you're already writing dual POV and struggling, what it might be useful is, you know how dual POV generally works is like, oh, you've got, you know, character A, you know, narrating scene A, and then character B narrating scene B, or whatever the chapter, whatever the case may be. Why don't you, if you're having trouble nailing down voice, why don't you rewrite the character A's perspective from character B's? Like, why don't you see the other side of that coin in that pivotal, you know, meeting scene or whatever it is? Because that might be where you start to untangle the POV, and it might be where you discover problems like, oh, I actually have to change this character, or I have to change their meeting, or whatever the case.
Yeah.
Also, I should say we should probably wrap up because this is ridiculous.
Our audio producer is going to kill us.
Yeah, Daria's not going to be happy with us. But I feel like we covered a lot of really interesting stuff, and it has me a little bit psyched to work on two of my stories that I'm having, you know, I'm having trouble with the stripper story. That's the one I was talking about with the...
You gotta come up with a working title.
I gotta come up with it. You know what the working title was in my head? The Stripper and the Twink, which is a horrible title, and it will die here. I'll never call it that. That's awful.
It'll die here, recorded for all eternity.
Yeah, that's what I'm putting it out there in the world for people to judge me as I should be judged. And then the fantasy story, which I'm excited to actually start. I have so much world building for that fucking thing done. I have a map. Actually, I was so proud. I drew a little map and I showed my friend and she was like, "It looks like a dick." I was like, "You're a dick," judging my beautiful map. And then I was like, "It looks like a horse's head."
Yeah, this has made me pumped.
Yeah,
I'm ready to go work.
I want to go wrangle my babies. I'm going to wrangle them into doing what I want. I'm going to wrangle fucking Scott and George. Yeah, I said their real names. Woo!
Whoa.
I did it.
If my characters had real names, I'd say them. I'm pretty sure that Carrie will be named Cecily, but we'll see.
Oh, that's so cute.
I know. I love that name. It's been stuck in my head ever since I saw it, so it's probably the one.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, thank you all for listening, and thank you to Renee for posing such an amazing question for our first... Also, thank you to Renee for being our first patron.
Like, yes.
That's awesome. We're psyched. And as usual, you can go to patreon.com/thehopelessromantic, and my Twitter is @AmandaHGean.
Mine is @AustinChanted.
Thank you so much. This episode of The Hopeless Romantic was produced by Daria DeFore, with graphics by Keezy Young and music composed by Carly Ann Warden. Follow us on Twitter @TheHRPodcast, add us on Facebook, and please rate and review on iTunes if you enjoyed.